Like we said, when the students know they're being heard and someone's there to listen, that's really important.
Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I'm your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team, here to lead conversations with educational leaders and experts. My hope is to share with you not only valuable insights and knowledge from leaders in education, but have fun while doing it and shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. As educators, we know that we can't control what students bring in with them each day, whether that be academic, behavioral, emotional, or even language learning needs. An educator's job is to support students, helping them feel safe in order that they can learn and meet their goals. Today, I wanted to share with you a conversation that I had with Gabby Graham, a former elementary dual language teacher who is passionate about helping schools support students coming from other cultures. We talk about how different aspects of student mental health can affect outcomes and how sometimes it is the simple things that can make all the difference in helping students feel safe and that they belong, no matter the culture they come from. This conversation reminded me that all over the country, there are teachers working hard to care for and meet the needs of students. One conversation, one lesson, or activity at a time. I hope you enjoy this episode. Okay, Gabby is here to chat with us a little bit about mental health and student outcomes. And Gabby, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and your sort of journey as an educator and your experience with students?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you, Larissa. So my background is in elementary education. I spent 10 years in the classroom working with dual language students, students of all different abilities. I was an inclusion teacher as well. And being in the classroom, we see every day how mental health and that social emotional component affects academics. If a student walks into the classroom and they're having a really bad day, they're not going to focus. They're not going to be on task. Their mind is just not where the teacher wants it to be. And so it's really important. In fact, you know, just thinking about my experience, how as educators, whether you are a paraprofessional, a teacher, even a school admin, it's important to really build relationships with the kids from the ground up, you know, really knowing where they're from, what their family's about, when they have bad days, not to push the academics, but to push them and knowing they're accepted, they're welcome. And once that grows and it's stronger, their academics will start to parallel their mental stability, the ability to just focus and to understand that, hey, my mind needs to be right in order for me to be successful. That's what I've seen in my background.
Yeah. Well, and I think that even your perspective as an elementary educator, I think is so important for, you know, some foundational years for students. You know, and we've, you know, talked about on the podcast and even in, you know, our blogs and different stuff about students feeling like they belong and that they're safe and how that can impact their student outcome. But I think even more so with mental health, I think it's such a, you know, there's many times that as an educator, I felt so ill-equipped to help students that are struggling with mental health because, yeah, I'm not trained in that. But I think there are simple things as educators, like you said, building that relationship. So you were a dual language teacher. Yes. Do you feel like, was that different or, more challenging when you come to students who maybe were learning English to sort of address some of those mental health issues? Was there, blockers and barriers to helping them with that?
Oh yeah, definitely. And when I think back about those kiddos that I had in my class, it wasn't even so much the language as it was a cultural issue. A lot of the students that I worked with came from Juarez, Mexico. And in that culture, you have to be strong. You put on a straight face What stays in the house does not leave the front door with that kind of a mindset. And so it was trying to get through to not just the students, but their families, you know, to let them know, I'm here to help. I'm here for your child. So that was the biggest roadblock I saw. And then you made a really good point about saying how we're not well equipped with those tools. I think also teachers need mental health support, you know, and that's another big issue that can come into play with student outcomes.
Yeah. Oh, because I mean, I don't know about you, but in my 13 years as an educator, some years were more difficult. Like I was dealing with my own sort of personal issues, you know, and as many people do, you know, growing, getting to your 20s and dealing with like life and things like that. And in those years, I knew that if I was not getting the help I needed for, or doing the things for my mental health that I needed to do, I was not able to like run at full capacity to help the students that, you know, were coming into my classroom. Mm-hmm. And I always felt like, you know, every student comes in with a bag of something, right? Like their mm-hmm. book bag is full of their experiences, their family background, their, you know, positive and negative experiences of school before they reach my classroom in seventh or eighth grade. And, you know, but I also had my own backpack. And so like the heavier my backpack was, the less I've unpacked and dealt with, it was harder to know how to help my students in that way. Mm-hmm. And so I think that like part of my own like understanding of mental health really helped, like helped other students. Not that I was like, oh, now that I've gone to counseling, I know how to counsel other people, yeah, but more of like, I maybe knew how to spot like when a student was kind of struggling with anxiety or like going, they just needed a little extra attention or even just like an extra emphasis on, hey, if you ever need anything, you know, there's someone, if you need to talk to someone, you know, here are the resources we have. And even to help parents that came in going, my kid's really anxious about life. And I'm like, well, here's the resources we have, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. So, you had more of an awareness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that is, I feel like that's really key. And I don't know about your experience, but like the more I was aware of what, how mental health impacted students and, their day-to-day work in school, the more I was able to like integrate sort of some of those concepts into like what I did every day. So like for you, what, maybe you have experience with this, maybe you don't, but what creative ways have you seen educators help address mental health or student wellness in their work?
Yeah, definitely. We did some really cool stuff when I was teaching in the elementary. One of the things we did, it was restorative practices that we had incorporated within the district and in the school building. But like just morning circles. I know it sounds really simple, right? Like a check-in. Okay, that's so simple. But when you do that, like first thing in the morning, especially in a Monday morning, I would see such a change in my kids because that gave them the freedom to kind of talk about their weekend, talk about what's bothering them, a quick little check-in, you know, with them. So that's one simple thing that we would do. But when it came to the lessons, for example, if I knew one of my students was having a really bad day, but they have such a love for basketball, you know, let's just put out there LeBron James, right? I would incorporate that into like a math lesson. I would quickly like change the words in a word problem to include the student's name and a basketball player, or the student's name and an example. And Larissa, I'm pretty sure you can agree with me, when students' names are in the lesson, they're like, oh, they feel so excited, spotlight's on me. So little things like that, I could see the kids now more alert, you know, and it may not be the most creative idea, but it's something so simple that the student knows, hey, they're paying attention to me. Hey, you know, Miss Graham sees me. Because we see our kids, and it's really important to make those little efforts to let them know that we see them and they're important.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's really key. Like, I taught in a middle school, and students feeling seen, like oftentimes they don't want to be seen, right? They feel really awkward, but yet they do want to be seen, you know, like they do want that attention. So I would do the same thing. I would integrate names into like grammar sentences and things like that, just for fun. And I think that that's a great way, and things that they're interested in. Like you, mm-hmm. it really says, hey, I see you and I see your interest and I see value in your interests. And I think that's a really good way to sort of highlight them. I want to go back to what you talked about with morning circles.
Yeah.
How do you find, like in the elementary, was morning circles, do you feel like it was instructive time and like how to talk about what that's bothering them? Or was it just purely a space for them just to be able to be themselves, to relax, to build community? Like, what did you find that was like the most important part of that?
Yeah, definitely. It was a safe space. We had little sayings that we would say, you know, everybody sat in a circle. We had a talking piece. The person with the talking piece is the only one that can speak. And we went over our norms. You know, you speak from the heart, you listen from the heart. What's spoken in the circle stays in the circle. So the kids knew that whatever we talked about was not going to leave the classroom. You know, we could do a circle with maybe a small group of kiddos, the whole class, even just one-on-one. But a lot of times in the morning, we would have such deep conversations, or a child really needed me at the moment, that I said, you know what, it's been 20 minutes. That's okay. We need to talk. Would it go into instruction time? Yes. But at the moment, that student was very important for me and for the other students to listen. So it was very family-like. It was very safe. It was very open. Or if they chose not to participate, that was okay too. I never wanted a student to feel like, oh, you have to talk. You have to tell me your emotions. Because that's not every student, you know? So it was a space where they can just sit and listen, participate if they wanted to, but they knew Miss Graham is here for you. And so are your classmates. We're here to support you. And of course, like I said, I was elementary, so it was, you know, a little bit different than your middle schoolers. But like we said, when the students know they're being heard and someone's there to listen, that's really important.
Yeah. Well, and I think about students that, you know, in middle school that were struggling with mental health, students that, you know, I mean, deeply struggled with mental health. I think a lot of the time there is that sense of feeling so alone, you know, and I think that probably was magnified with the pandemic and with students feeling, you know, alone in their homes or things like that. Some students more than others. And I think that that emphasis of really making a kid feel like they belong and that there's a space and someone that wants to hear them, I think is, and that looks like, you know, whether it be the classroom teacher, and I don't know if you did this in your school, but I know in ours, we really try to have an emphasis of like letting every kid know, or like helping kids find an adult they really could count on or relate to, or like, who's your trusted adult? We'd always ask, you know, we kind of did a survey to make sure that kids had a trusted adult. You know, cause sometimes that was the, you know, the paraeducator in the room, or sometimes it was the librarian, or sometimes it was that school secretary that they talked to every day when they came in late or whatever.
Very true.
You know, the power of every adult in the building, I think is, we underestimate the power of all of the other support people within a school, not just teachers.
Yeah, that's so true. And like you said, a lot of these kiddos don't have that adult, just depending on what their situation is. So if they can even go to, you know, the custodian that visits every morning, my custodian had such great relationships with the kids in my class. So seeing that the kids can look to someone, you know, not just within the four walls of the classroom, I think just made the entire school building and experience a safe one for the kids.
So, I love hearing your perspective, especially about when you're talking about, students in dual culture or like in a dual language program, just coming from another culture. Were there certain kind of strategies that you used in your classroom that were very culturally sensitive and, you know, I think culturally sensitive is probably the best word I can use to describe it as you, maybe if they were newly arrived or like, even those that are continuing to learn a new language and learn a new culture. What kind of strategies did you use with, those students?
Yeah. So I love that question because it really makes me think back and I'm already imagining certain kiddos in my classroom. I think one of the biggest things that I would do is get to know the families first. When I knew that they were you know, coming to the classroom, whether it was beginning of the year, middle of the year, I made it a point to talk to the families just to really get to know what are the things they like, what's their background like, how was, you know, the last school year, because that kind of helps me set up the tone for the rest of the year. Certain lessons talked about more Americanized holidays or foods, whatever was in context, I would always make a point to compare it to something similar to them. You know, with my background, being two races as well, I have Hispanic background as well, I know a lot of that culture. So I can bring in, you know, familiar foods and stuff. Or if the context was on things that the students had no idea about. And this is a funny story. I was doing a lesson on money, coins and dollars. And part of me forgot, in Mexico, they don't use quarters and dimes and pennies. So I'm teaching a lesson on values. And the student's just like, Miss, we don't use that. So there I am, I have to change it up to the peso, the Mexican currency. So those kind of little switch up that I'd have to do, but I always made sure the students knew that they belong here and I'm going to make an effort to teach you the way that you know, so they can make those connections. And that goes with the language too, you know, from Spanish to English, you try to find those cognates that the students can relate to in the words, and that kind of develops their language for sure.
Yeah. And that, I mean, I think that that's, I used to do that with figurative language. You know, I'd teach idioms. I would try to pull in other cultural statements or phrases to, you know, to help them understand the concept of, you know, something that's not literal. And in seventh grade, going from literal to abstract is really it's a difficult, because their brains are just not, some of their brains are just not quite there yet. And so I always tried to bring in other cultures, because I had a lot of language learners as well. And just to try to emphasize that every culture, and even just like, I would go all around the United States, there's different kinds of sayings that are not literal, but it means something else. And so trying to like talk through those of like, what do your parents say when you're like, money doesn't grow on trees, or different things. And so, but I think that being that culturally sensitive of understanding how to, because that's powerful learning, like really making connections in their brains to really help them grasp and make learning more meaningful to them. So that's, I love that.
And it also helps with them socially, you know, because then they're able to connect with other students like, hey, I know what you're talking about, because where I'm from, this is what we do, you know? So it's not just academic, it's that social aspect for them too.
And that's so key. It kind of comes back to that social emotional learning part of just learning how to illustrate or to talk about other cultures with respect and dignity, and like honoring of the value of other cultures, that it's just, it's not bad. It's different, and that's okay. And to like,
it's beautiful.
It's beautiful. And being able to, I think that that is really key, because that I could see how, and I would see this in students coming from another culture or country and feeling like they had to assimilate and change who they were to be, you know, to be like other people in the class. And I mean, that happened a lot in middle school in general, but I think, but really helping them, you know, being able to highlight those things so that it showed dignity, and honor, you know, to be able to help kids be proud, but, and, you know, and that's part of their own self-discovery. I think that it takes time, especially teenagers.
I don't know how you did it, but it teaches respect to, in a sense, I would really hope that we were able to model, you know, respect for others, because like I said, we're the only adult in their world for a major portion of their day for 9 months out of the year. So if we can model that respect and acceptance, I just hope they can carry it on into society when they grow older. Yeah.
Well, and that, I think that impacts the mental health, because it impacts how they feel about themselves and, you know, the things that they're carrying into the classroom. And so, and ultimately does it impact how, you know, they're learning and their learning experience overall. So, Gabby, okay, we could talk about this for a long time. And I think there's so much about language learners, students coming from other, you know, having a diverse cultures within a school, I think that, has its challenges, you know, with establishing supports, right. Having, you know, language interpreters for parents and families and those kind of things. And so I just appreciate you being willing to talk about your experiences. Do you have any, advice or even just like thoughts about how we can help and support educators who are doing this kind of work to support students from other cultures and language learners in the classroom?
Oh yeah, there's so much that can be done. I think if the teachers or any adult that's in the classroom, really, or any student or any adult that has a hand in the student's education, I think if we were kind of given like a background into the student first, because you really have to know where they're coming from, you know, and it's not so much the academic standpoint. I think the adults need to be supported with, like we talked about, the social emotional aspect of these kiddos. Where are they coming from? And just put yourself in their shoes. You know, if I were to be flown to a country across the world without any insight into how the culture, the schooling, the food is, be a fish out of water for sure. So imagining these students that are not adults yet, you know, whether they're kindergartners, sixth grade, middle, high school, we need to really be empathetic. And so really, you know, focusing on that empathy part for the adults. And then when it comes to academics, just making sure the resources are there. You know, mm-hmm. we're very limited in language resources when it comes to whether it's worksheets or textbooks, because it's going to come in either English or Spanish, you know, but there's so many beautiful languages out there. We need to make sure that we have access to resources. And if we don't, just support the teacher, you know, try to help them find some creative ways to reach them. Check in on the teachers every now and then. Hey, I know you got a new student. How is it going? How can I help? Find a community member or somebody that can help with translations or that immersion of the culture. I'm sure mm-hmm. there's plenty of ways, but the adults need a lot of the support for sure.
Yeah. Well, and I, you know, as someone who I never, as a young person, had to learn another language, so I have no experience to sort of like relate to that student. So I think there's always that sense of like, if you can find someone that can help support teachers and their understanding of, you know, how to support language learners, it's really great. Mm-hmm. And I know in my own training, ESL training, we did a lot of that, of really talking about what that experience is like. But yeah, resources is a huge thing. Cause I created so many worksheets using Google Translate in the best way that I could, you know, to try to create. Thankfully, like I did have, I remember when I figured out that there was a resource that I could print both English and Spanish versions. Mm-hmm. And I was very appreciative of that. But I even had a student, I had one year that I had Spanish and Vietnamese and and I don't even know, it was not even Vietnamese language. It was another language. And I had to make sure I had copies for those students. And so like those kind of things, that's huge yeah. for students to be able to access the learning materials. And so,
for sure. And it takes a lot of time on the teacher's part. When I was doing some curriculum writing for the district and I was doing social studies in Spanish, I was like, there's nothing in Spanish for these kiddos. So I would reach out, you know, to the district department, like, where can we pull from? I need some help, because it takes extra time and effort to do that. And, you know, being in the classroom where a lot of times, I mean, how many times, Larissa, did you follow your lesson plan to the T? I mean, very rarely, right? Things happen. You got to switch things up. So if something happens like that and you got to switch it up, you're like, okay, what am I going to do? Let me type this up real quick. Or like you said, let me Google Translate it real quick, print it. You've got to be ready.
Yeah.
Like all the
well,
time.
Well, and that, yes. Oh, the amount of time that it takes to be prepared for, you know, not only you just in general, then to add mm-hmm. another layer, because I always feel like that's another layer. And I know that, like, because I had my ESL certification, I didn't always have extra support in the classroom for mm-hmm. those mm-hmm. students. And so it was like, it was on me to like create all of those things. And, you know, that's, I just feel like some of those challenges, there are ways that we can help support, you know, teachers in that. And I think there's more and more resources are being created, but you're right, it's just English and Spanish. And we know that those are not the only languages yeah, that yeah. we're encountering, beautiful languages. And mm-hmm. I wish I could learn all of them. No. And I'm like,
add that to your list.
Yeah. But I think there's such, and I, You know, and I've talked to other district people and that's their goal to have a dual language curriculum so that they can be helping support those students. Gabby, this was really fun. I loved talking about this. So the last question I always ask on our podcast is, what is, or even what was your favorite school supply as a kid?
I love this question because I've been hearing everybody's responses. Always has been, I'm a diehard Flair pin lover. Give me all the colors. Give me all of them. Flair pins. I mean, I use them now still. I can't never let go of them, but for sure, Flair pins. That's the best.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's like the teacher pin, right? It's they found their niche of people to brand to.
I mean, I need to change the name to the teacher's pen, and I would gladly be the spokesperson.
Well, what I love is like the flare pen was an extension of like the gel pen when I was in school, middle school and high school, and like using a gel pen to write your notes, like to your friend, like the shiny glittery gel pens where you can barely read it. Like I remember I'd have students try to like do their homework in gel pen, and I was like, I cannot read this. Like,
it's silver.
It's silver. It's gold. It's yellow. It's glittery yellow. I can't read it.
Right. I cannot read this. This is for teacher use only.
I know. So, well, thank you so much for chatting with me today. I loved hearing your perspective, and keep being awesome.
Oh, thank you, Larissa. My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to School and Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast to hear all our future episodes. As well, if you're enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcast on iTunes? This helps others find our podcast and let us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchingminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn @branchingminds.